All right, guys, I have a very, very exciting interview for you today. We have Katie McPherson, and I'm going to tell you why I'm really excited about this conversation. But Katie McPherson is a former secondary school administrator, and she's the co-author of Why Teens Fail and What to Fix. She's been in the educational system for 19 years, served as a secondary school teacher, middle school guidance counselor, and assistant principal. She's also the founder of SHE. SHE form Sharing Healthy Experiences Serving Teens and Their Families, and co-founder of the bully prevention program called Be the One. She also works at the Gurion Institute, which Janet Allison also had training under. So it's all about the boys and girl brain. But today we started talking about social media and bullying, and the conversation went into creating healthy boundaries with our technology. Throughout this whole conference, we went back, if you guys went back and listened to Dr. Victoria Dunkley's interview about resetting our children's brain, and she's a psychiatrist, and she has the 4-week program on kind of giving our children an emotional detox. Katie takes it from a different perspective of setting those healthy boundaries, but also understanding when our children do have this media, how are we paying attention? How are we still connected and understanding what our children are up to? And I love the way that she mentions it, from one, because she's an educator, right? So she sees this on a daily basis of, what the children are experiencing and the natural consequences of their life experiences. But then she also has 4 girls, and she's a researcher into all of this stuff. So it's understanding, how can we guide and teach and set healthy boundaries without being manipulative or controlling? So we got in great conversation about this. We talked about social justice and the difference between respect and dignity, and bullying, and how I hate that word and it's totally overused. But what can we do as parents? How can we start communicating with our kids, helping them understand more about humanity and themselves and how to represent themselves online, and more importantly, the boundaries that we hold to kind of guide these crazy wild animals that we allow into our homes? So that's my spiel. Anyway, guys, we're going to jump into this interview. And before we do that, I'm going to remind you about the Teach Your Kids to Meditate program. Head on over to teachyourkidtomeditate.com/program. This is a 4-week DIY Start Tonight program where I will guide you through step by step, and it's all action based. So it's week one, have your child listen to this meditation, you do it with them. These are the conversations you can have with your kid. This is why you're doing this, and it's helping you help your child. So you're co-creating together, you're deepening your relationship, you're giving yourself some sense of control of, I know how to support my child when these big emotions are coming up. I know what's happening, and you're learning together, you're growing together. There's also amazing resources for you to start implementing your own mindfulness strategies. So if this is something you're interested in, I'm giving you 50% off during the conference. So it's only $147 Canadian. And I have 2 amazing bonuses that I've been talking about. One, 100% free, just an added bonus, throwing it in there to make your life easier. Unlimited access to all of these interviews. So once you register, you go into the resource section, and all of the interviews are there for you. So if you've missed any, or you wanted to go back and listen again and again and again, you have access to that. 2, the second bonus that I have for you is a live Q&A. So at the end of June, all of this information is at teachyourkidtomeditate.com/program. At the end of June, I'm going to be hosting a live Q&A. So what's going to happen is you're going to jump on this group conference call, and you're going to give me all of your questions, your feedback, whatever is going on in your life, and you get to pick my brain. So those are the 2 bonuses that are being thrown in, and I'm already taking 50% off the Teach Your Kid to Meditate program. So you could check that out online. Other than that, all of the resources that you need are in the emails that I've been providing, and I'm just so, so excited to have you here, and definitely to listening to today's conversation, because this is a very exciting one and something near and dear to my heart. All right, guys, let's go. All right, Katie, I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you for joining today.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a fun and exciting topic. I am a mother of three boys, and you are a mother of four girls?
Correct.
Okay. And you are also, you used to be a middle school teacher, vice principal?
Both, yes.
Okay. So you have the life experience and the professional experience, and this is a hot topic. I want to talk about, it doesn't matter if you're in kindergarten or high school, but we kind of need to figure out this big scary area of parenting, which is bullying, social media, and what do we do? And where do we start? So I'd like to just dive in about like what you've noticed as a professional and kind of the problem you're like committed to solving.
Well, I've noticed, and I'm sure others have noticed, the influx of parents who are swooping in to try to save the day. And that goes for teachers as well, as we intervene in situations that maybe don't need intervention from the standpoint of we are exiting our secondary students with very low coping and resiliency skills. And so when they get into conflict, whether it's on the playground or online, going to parents for strategies is wonderful. We want to bolster and support them in those ways. But parents then going to the school and saying, my child's being bullied, what are you going to do about it? And, you know, going blood for blood, so to speak, as opposed to talking to their student about, okay, I'm here to help you and support you. What are some strategies that you, the student, can think of and come up with? Typical adult responses sound a lot like walk away, just ignore them, find a new group of friends. When you have a true aggressor versus victim relationship and the victim is feeling pretty low, walking away and ignoring someone is probably not going to be the best strategy, because the aggressor is just going to continue to come back for more. So a better approach would be how to teach the student to self-advocate for themselves and for others, which is really our end goal, is how to create a social justice champion.
Hmm. Can you explain that? Because I like that terminology better. Before I, you know, we started this interview, I said, you know, bullying, that word has become like a thing now. Like, I'm being bullied, right? And so something needs to happen. But I like the term that you call it social justice champion. Like, what is this, and why is it shifting?
Well, Rosalind Wiseman, who wrote Queen Bees and Wannabes and Masterminds and Wingmen, I've done a bunch of training under her, and I just love her philosophy and work. And her philosophy is, we talk to kids a lot about the word respect. And within a social group, what kids are truly doing is controlling, manipulating, and exploiting each other. We all do it as humans. We even do it as adults. We do it in leadership. It's not too crazy to think that kids on the playground are doing it to each other. So instead of training kids in report, 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 although we want them to do that when it's a safety issue, physical, emotional, or mentally unsafe situation, we also want to teach them strategies when it's just a very typical social interaction. So a social justice champion is a kiddo that can move in and out of different social groups with fluidity, who has friends from all different sorts of groups and can stand up for themselves and for others. And so the true goal that we're working towards is, if I have social competence, I can get through any of these types of conflicts, mostly on my own with parental and administrative and teacher support, knowing that those trusted adults are there for me. But I kind of got this on my own, even in third grade, even in seventh grade. But what's been happening is, over the last 10, 15 years, there's this huge swooping in and intervening of adults. And so the adult becomes the locus of control. And the kids are constantly looking to the adults as to, what do I do? What do I do? That kiddo leaves 12th grade and goes to college and has zero confidence in how to solve a problem, how to get through a conflict.
Yeah, and I love that you call it social confidence, and I want to talk a little bit about that and how we can, like me as a parent and an educator, you know, start to shift the mindset, because I believe it all starts with us. I was doing an interview with someone else, and she's talking about how stressed out our children are today and the pressure they have, and I was like, but wait a minute, who's putting this pressure on our children? And I'm like, it's adults. right? Like, it's adults. So let's just back it up a little bit. You touched on it, but I noticed this as a parent where, you know, I'll get the call and say, your child did this, and this is what we did as, you know, an institution to kind of discipline your child. But again, that doesn't solve the problem. So two questions. One, how do we teach our children social confidence? And what kind of institutional shifts can we create when it comes to this?
Well, I think it goes back to kind of the foundation of Rosalind's framework around social justice, that we do all of this talking about respect, and the word respect means mutual admiration for each other. The word dignity, on the other hand, means inherent worth. So we talk to kids when they get into conflict with others, they push or shove each other, they verbally abuse each other. We talk about, okay, now you need to respect each other. Well, when a student is in high conflict with someone else, they're not going to mutually admire another student. And we're kind of tying their hands when we ask them to do that. And then the second assumption is, now I need you to say that you're sorry to this other student. When in fact, that's not really the art of the apology, and they're not ready to do that. So in our efforts to be super efficient at the school level, we create systems within the school system that tie the hands of kids and send them a really mixed message about what we really want the skill to be. The skill is, you took my dignity away. You stifled my dignity today when you excluded me from the lunch table and called me a name. And so the goal at the end of the day is to create a system where kids understand dignity is mine to keep. I'm going to have a conflict with a lot of kiddos throughout my life, but nobody has the right to take my voice away from me. And unfortunately, to be really honest with you, there are some adults on campuses and in homes that are stifling their own kids' voices. So the real training is to get away from the word respecting each other and looking at dignity, that dignity is theirs to keep, and that we're going to be here for you as you work your way through this messy. But from a parent standpoint and teacher administrative standpoint, we're going to step back a little and let you two interface as human beings and set boundaries with each other and work through a framework and process that makes sense, as opposed to the adult giving a consequence for a very typical human interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really important, because it is in these moments where we do learn our skills as adults, right? Or, and then you grow up and you don't have these social confidence, respect, dignity, like you don't have these basic skills, it's going to come to bite you in the butt, because you're going to, you might get fired from a job, you might be put on probation, you're going to be like, you know, court ordered to go to anger management. Like, it's going to catch up to you eventually. So, you know, it always comes back to this, I don't want to say connection piece, because I'm a huge believer in not shaming parents that, you know, your children are watching you and they're learning these behaviors from you. Because sometimes kids are just assholes and you have to them these skills. So it's really hard to disconnect yourself as a parent and go, oh my gosh, my child is hurting somebody else. And I don't know what to do. So we talk about respect, we talk about all of this, but what on a practical level can I do as a parent when I'm getting that phone call from the school that's saying, like, if you don't fix this problem, like, your child is going to eventually be expelled from school because they can't handle their big emotions?
To be really honest with you, that's an adult that doesn't understand an underdeveloped brain. I mean, really, the half development of a female brain is 11. Half development for boys is 15. So 92% of my job during the school day for the last 20 years has been working with students in my office. The root of the word discipline is disciple. So our job is to teach our disciples. And part of teaching them is recognizing they're going to make big, fat, fantastically horrible mistakes. And our job is to connect them with care, be the boots on the ground to say, I understand you made an impulsive error. There's going to be a natural consequence to your actions, but let's sit down and talk about strategies for next time. Now, is it going to happen again? Absolutely. We're looking at brains that don't have a prefrontal cortex that's developed. So those decision-making capabilities come much later in life. If half development for a boy is 15, that means full development is 30. So to look at a high school boy and think that he is going to make awesome decisions 100% of the time would be really unfair. And that's what we train about, is the systems that we've set up are actually sending really blurry mixed messages for our kids. So the strategy at home to connect has to be things like dinner together, tech talk Tuesday, take out your phones, let's look at your news feeds. Tell me the bravest thing you see. Tell me the kindest thing you see. Tell me the craziest thing you see. Tell me about a kid at school that constantly gets in trouble. What's going on with him, do you think? And have those courageous conversations with your kids about, well, what do you think you should do? And brainstorm strategies that are developmentally appropriate for the age your child is.
So a lot of this is just communication, right?
Like, absolutely.
And having those, you called it, if I heard you correctly, you said you called them courageous conversations.
Right, right.
So why do you call them courageous conversations?
Because no one's willing to have them. And, you know, parents are almost like afraid, I think, or, you know, some of them are what they call too busy. Some of them are stressed. And nobody's sitting down and interfacing anymore. You go anywhere, an airport, a restaurant, everyone's head down into their devices. Whether you're 9 or you're 38, everyone is on their device. And we need to take back childhood and take back our lives from some of this technology. Although it's great and it advances us, I would argue it's doing more harm than good. It's doing a lot of harm to relationships, and it's definitely impacting the developing brain.
Yeah, I'm actually speaking to a woman about resetting the brain because I forget what the diagnosis was, but it's, I think because it's culturally appropriate, just like, you know, the food industry, because I'm big on food, but that's a whole nother conversation.
Sure.
And how that affects the brain. But, you know, because it's a cultural norm, if you're not conscious to it, you just go with the flow and go, well, this is what everyone else is doing. But, you know, I'm considered a weirdo all the time or crazy because I like to do things different. But wait a minute. Like, let's think about this for a moment, right? Like, your child has, and I'd like to get into the conversation of social media and bullying and going down that path. But if my child has this little tiny device in their hand, and, you know, even if I have these parental controls and all of this, I'm pretty tech savvy and I still, it blows my mind. I can't figure something out. And my son is like, here, mom, bing, bang, boom. And I'm like, how do you know this? Right? So it blows my mind. But at the same time, when we have conversations about certain things, and he's like, I already know that. Because even if he doesn't bring his iPod to school, guess what his friend did? So look what they're watching at recess in the corner in the playground when nobody even knew that he had it. So it is important to have these courageous conversations with our children. So let's talk about the social media and what we can do as parents and what our children are really experiencing.
I think there are three things when I do trainings that parents need to be really aware of. And two of them I think are really easy. One of them is a little more difficult. Number one, be in the know. Know what's out there, know the app, know what your child has access to. There's some really great websites, commonsensemedia.org, facesmartsocial.com has a parent app guide that provides you with all of the current apps, the good, the bad, the ugly about all of them.
Can you say those resources slower? So,
sure.
Yeah.
It's commonsensemedia.org and facesmartsocial.com. They both have, you know, a media guide for parents, a parent app guide that leads you through, here are all of the apps that most kids are using right now. This is what you need to know about them, the safety features. And there are a whole ton of them, obviously, that no child should have. There's nothing good about them. So that's a really easy way for parents to keep up with what's going on as far as the apps are concerned. Secondly, on that note, I would say I have spent hours of my life that I'll never get back searching for missing kids.
Oh no.
Because parents don't have the password and the ID to their child's iCloud. So my rule of thumb is there should only be one family ID and password so that anything that's syncing onto their devices is also syncing onto yours. There is no good reason in my mind that I can think of why a child under the age of 18 should have something on their device that you are not aware of. And the only way to make sure that kids aren't downloading things that you don't know about is to have one central ID and you know the password and they don't. So either they have to come to you and say, I want to download this, or you already have Family Share set up where it alerts you that a child's trying to load this. Do you give the okay, yes or no? That is the only way for parents to manage the mania that we know as apps and all of the things that they love to do. And so that's just a really, in my mind, very easy way to manage everything. The second piece we always talk about is a central charging station. These kids are plugged in way too long, all day, all night, before school, after school. So a central charging station allows you to take the devices at a reasonable time and put them in your bedroom, not on your nightstand, but somewhere in your bedroom, so that all the devices are in one place and kids are actually unplugging, they're getting good rest, they're not up all night chatting with their friends. A lot of what goes on at night is what's creating chronic anxiety and depression in our students. Mm. You know, a text from somebody can send a girl spinning and ruminating all night long. Her brain can't be compressed. She doesn't get good rest. She goes to take a test the next day. It all directly impacts the developing brain. And obviously, when a kid gets heightened, especially at night, if they just studied for a quiz, anything that they just studied goes directly out the window if cortisol goes up into the brain and they can't bring that brain down. So we're directly impacting academics, social, emotionals, as well as physical health. Mm-hmm. So a central charging station is a really easy way for parents to manage all of the devices. So you have the app guide, you have the device central charging station, and then lastly, I think most important is to sit down with your family and say, okay, how are we going to embrace devices in our home? Here's our family data contract. Here are some reasonable rules we want to put around this contract and say to the kids, what do you think? Let them have a voice in the contract, because what's happening in most of our homes is there's no sort of rule around it. Parents are arbitrarily, when they're upset, they take the devices away. When they're tired, they give the devices back. Mm-hmm. And the mixed message that we're sending our kids is, I trust you with this $600 device. I'm paying $100 a month for it. Now I don't trust you. Oh, you did something wrong? Now I really don't trust you. Oh, I'm really tired after work. Here's your device back. And there's this really mixed message that goes on. And during that power struggle back and forth, you're chipping away at the really good relationship that you're so desperately trying to build, especially during 5th through 12th grade. And so those three pieces are ways that parents can really manage devices, know what's going on, and help kids get through some of the conflict that happens online.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautifully said. I think it's, but okay.
We've been busy. I'm on the road like at least once a week, truly just giving this talk to parents. And I'm still mystified that parents look at me like I am a rocket scientist. And I'm like, this is so easy. You would not give a 9-year-old a loaded gun without gun safety training classes. And the gun safety training classes would have different levels of certification. It would be ongoing and pervasive. We're giving kids truly a loaded weapon without any training. And then we're condemning and shaming them when they make really impulsive, crappy decisions online. And they're looking at us like, well, you gave this to me. And they're not understanding why you're coming at them in the way you are.
And then they lose respect for you as the adult because they
Absolutely.
Assume that you know what you're doing.
Right.
And our children are very smart, and I don't know why we don't give them enough credit, but there's many conversations where I've had with my children, especially my oldest, who's 12, but it's a co-creation. It's not, you know, where I'm like, oh, do this. And he laughs at me. He's like, Mom, let's be realistic. I'm like, okay, let's work it out together. But a lot of times the conversation ends in, I'm just listening, right? What's your perspective? Okay, cool. These are my rules. And so what I want to talk about next is the resistance that comes up. One, you're saying this to me and I'm like, yeah. And one, I'll tell you my little weakness. We have a 15-year-old exchange student that lives with us. A lot of times we have like foreign exchange students that live here from other countries. And so I set up boundaries of computers and phones outside of the room at night, blah, blah, blah. I don't have an alarm clock. Okay, I'll buy you a real alarm clock, right?
Right.
And then I just slowly let the boundary slip. And my, and then, you know, I'm like, well, she's not my kid, whatever. And I'm like, oh, here we go. I got to do this again and again and again. So as a parent, as an educator, I understand the importance of what you're saying. As a parent, this is why I go back to the message of it's really important to take care of your own mental health, your own emotional health, your energy levels, and, you know, the self-care, because you got to be on your game, right?
Right, yes.
Like, that's number one. Number two is, it's okay to fall off the wagon. Let's get back on. So what do you suggest as a parent when you get that resistance from the child that's like, I don't want to do this. You know, there's this, you're going to have resistance. They're not going to like these rules at first. So how do you suggest as the parent to cope with that and to follow through and to hold that boundary?
Well, it goes back to what you said. I mean, you have to be on your game and you have to be consistent. And the reality is we're all overscheduled, overworked, and really tired. And it's so easy to come home and just let down the boundaries. But every time we let down the boundary, we're also sort of letting down our shield because we're sending so many mixed messages and then we wonder why they freak out and have tantrums and things like that. So I think it's a human condition that we're not going to be consistent, but to be really honest when you're not, you know, when you have that reflection time to say, wow, I really let that boundary down, and to go to your kid and be really honest with them and actually apologize. I mean, kids are shocked when you apologize to them, but I think in those moments that's when they realize like, oh, my parents are human too. Mm-hmm. I think that is really what you're talking about, the crux of what's going on in most of our homes with kids saying, my parents don't understand me. Because in one moment when you're on your game, you're really holding that boundary firm. And when you're tired, you're not. And so they're like, well, wait a minute. Yesterday you said X, Y, Z. And as you said, we don't give them as much credit as we should for being as smart as they are. And they pay attention way more than we give them credit for. And so I don't think there's any magic answer to remaining consistent, but the more consistent you can be, the more consistent your child will be as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's beautiful. And I always tell people, focus on your why. Like, why are you implementing mm-hmm. this boundary? Focus on the bigger picture. Like, I want my child to be a good person. I want my child to get a good night's sleep. I want my child mm-hmm. to have good brain development. Like, that's the bigger picture, right? And they, in the moment, they're not thinking of this. So you're like, you know what? You may hate me, but one day you're going to say, thanks, Mom.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and with the phones and devices, my girlfriend lives in Florida and she emailed me yesterday and said, Lily wants a phone. She's going to be 10. And I want to know what you think because I know you're really passionate about this. I said, you really want to know what I think? Because you're not going to like the answer. There's no good reason for her to have a phone just to have a phone. How is it going to make her a better person? What do you think the purpose of the phone is going to be? What's she going to do on the phone? So, well, I'm not going to let her have social media or anything, maybe just texting. Who is she texting at age 10? Who is that important that she's texting at age 10? If you want to have a phone for her so she can contact you after school to say she's safe, or you're going to pick her up from a girlfriend's house and you want to be able to text her and say, I'm on my way, there's a gizmo gadget. It can text four people. It can call one emergency number. perfect for a 10-year-old. So there's a hybrid model there that you can, you know, use in the interim. But for a 10-year-old to have a phone, I really just don't see the purpose. So like you said, what's the why? What's the why behind what you're doing? And her response to me was, well, all of her friends have one.
I was just going to say
great.
That.
Yeah.
That's the response. And I don't want my child to be left out.
Yeah. Well, then, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. And then we're projecting our own fears and insecurities as parents.
Yeah. And, you know, everyone does have them. I've worked in so many schools, you know, starting in second grade, kids have phones because the excuse is, I want to be able to get a hold of them. And that's fine. But if you start in second grade, you better hold on tight because eighth grade's going to look pretty rocky. You know, once a child has a phone, there's no going back.
Mm-hmm. You know, my husband and I just went away for a week and we locked up all the devices before we left because I literally felt like, okay, so this is another topic of grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
I literally felt like if we had them out, there's no control, right? Because it's endless.
Right.
I'm not there to hold the boundary. And I can see a difference in them when, you know, it's like, oh, I love you so much. Here's all the candy and video game time you want or computer time you want. So what's your – okay. So – and I'm just asking these questions because I know people are thinking it, and I get them all the time. I'm against video games. I'm against screen time. You know, I have these boundaries and values in my mind. And other people in my circle or family are not, do not hold the same values as me. So when it comes to gifts, when it comes to Christmas, when it comes to visiting, right, babysitting, how do you handle that?
Well, I think it just has to be, unfortunately, like I said, like another, you know, quote, courageous conversation with grandparents that these are the reasonable rules we put around the devices. In order for us to not lose our minds, we need to be consistent and we need you to be on the same page. And one thing that might work with that generation is really talking about the impact on the teen brain and the developing brain. Kids have been spending 3 to 4 hours a day online. If you were to look at a brain scan, it looks exactly like a brain scan of a cocaine addict. The amount of dopamine, which is the feel-good chemical that we all get from friendships but also sexual intercourse, is dumping on these developing brains. So the reason that kids are so addicted to these devices is not only the attachment and attunement needs that are being met by friendship and likes and followers, but it's also a chemical addiction to dopamine. So boys that are spending 3, 4, 5 hours on a video game, they're actually pruning, you know, their brain is pruning away the stuff that they don't need, but it's eating away like Swiss cheese at the stuff they do need. So when we look at boys, especially with video games and looking at, we're not honing the verbal emotive that they really need, that they're not strong in, and we're honing the logical, spatial, mathematical, which is great. So perhaps for the grandparents, what they, your take or angle could be is, you know, let me talk to you a little bit about brain development and what I learned. That may be an angle to take with them. Obviously, grandparents are all well known for being softies, but also recognizing like, for a week, then when I come back, it's going to take me 2 weeks to rectify what you've done. So I'm really asking if you could please conform and align with us for this week.
Right. And you know what? In a perfect world, people would respond and respect, right? But we know there's going to be people that say,
sure,
I'm divorced and my, you know, my ex will not, is not in alignment with my values, or there's relationship stuff that's going on there. So at the end of the day, it's, you know, have that courageous conversation. But if you know the other party is not going to respect your decision, again, it all comes back to you, right? The listener, the person who wants change. And it's like, we can't protect our children from everything, but how are we showing up? What decisions are we making? And are we standing in our power with that boundary? Or are we, you know, giving into something and then feeling really crappy about it at the end of the day? So you know, to circle back around the conversation, you know, we're talking about bullying, we're talking about social confidence, social media, respect and dignity. And, you know, you've given a lot of great strategies and resources, and I'm listening to this and I'm going, but where do I start? It feels so overwhelming. What do I do today?
Well, I think those conversations can start as early as kindergarten and first grade. I mean, we have students that are in conflict on the playground that young. And again, it goes back to these are all really normal developmental things that are going on with kids. Not everything is bullying. Controlling, manipulating, and exploiting each other is something we as human beings do, and that is the definition of aggression. The definition of violence is the destruction and destroying someone. Now, our schools don't really have a definition of either of those definitions. They may use the word aggression in their code of conduct book, but from a parent perspective, what you can start doing at home is, again, giving kids real-life scenarios at the dinner table. Like, so what would you do if that happened? Or ask them, you know, what's going on in your classroom? You know, what conflicts are you seeing? And what are some strategies that you have? Get kids talking. They have some really good ideas about how to get through the conflict, and it's not sitting on the wall at recess. It's not sitting in timeout. It's not missing out on PE because you couldn't sit still in class or because you were off task. It's interfacing together as human beings, and that's the piece that's missing in our schools and in our homes, is that everyone just wants the quick fix. They just want it to go away and move on as a family. The schools want to give a consequence and move on as a school and get the kid back into instruction. But the unfortunate piece is if we don't do the work ahead of time, what we're looking at nationally is we're looking at a whole bunch of things, self-harm, anxiety, depression, very low coping and resilience skills. So the data speaks for itself. We've got to start recognizing that if we want to launch these kids as adults, we almost have to start at age 30 and work backwards. What skills do we want to have? We want them to be well-read, well-traveled, well-dressed, well-spoken. How do we get there? And the only way we can get there is to really, truly start being human beings again, to really start interfacing at a very young age.
So less is more, back to basics.
Yep, absolutely. And I think we've gotten away, truly, I love technology. And, you know, the last piece I would say on technology is I've talked a lot about what not to do, some things that you can start doing as early as third through 12th grade. What really is happening in our employment and our college admissions is they're moving towards an e-portfolio. So what we're looking at from an admission standpoint, employment, internships, even your first summer job is, what is the evidence and documentation that you're a good person? Why should I employ you? Why should I admit you to UCLA? The things that they're looking for are evidence on your social media platforms that you are a global citizen. In order to do that, kids need to start creating social media platforms that showcase the awesome kids that they are. And that is so easy. Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, you can do it on any of the major platforms where you're posting photos of awesome things you're doing and talking about the great things you're doing instead of some of the things you're posting that are crazy town. So what's going to happen in the next 2 years is the Common App is still going to be the essay. But alongside of that, kids are going to be sending an e-portfolio link that shows this is who I am. These are my intangibles so that colleges, when they look, if you have a 3.5 and Heather has a 3.5 and we have all these awesome accolades and activities, I want to get to know this kid a little bit more. The e-portfolio is going to be almost a Facebook profile with videos, with photos, with testimonials from teachers and professors talking about this is the kind of kiddo he or she is. And so that colleges can make a better informed decision. There are whole departments at these universities dedicated to digging in to kids' social media and looking at what type of kid you are. Mm-hmm. And if they see something on your platform that says not good for this university, you're out. It doesn't matter if you have a 3.8 and you are a valedictorian. I mean, really, it comes down to teaching kids how to use digital leadership for good, how to create a portfolio and digital footprint that showcases and markets and brands who you are. And that training is not currently going on in our schools. They just don't have the budget and they don't have time. So those are things where parents can be connecting at home and starting to house the accolades on a desktop folder or on a thumb drive, where you're not scrambling junior year to get those things together. You've already compiled almost a virtual locker of things that you can then put into this e-portfolio and send to employers, send to internships, send to admissions officers.
Yeah.
So those are just, you know, some ways to turn the tide on technology is bad, you can't have it, to here it is, let's embrace it. How can we work to make this portfolio so that you can use it for your future?
Yeah, how can it be a positive extension of who you are? And I love that. It's kind of like branding for kids.
Absolutely. And, you know, LinkedIn, you can create a LinkedIn profile when you're 12. I mow lawns. This is my lawn mowing service. And you can continue to build that LinkedIn profile until you're 18 and applying for colleges.
Oh, that's so cool. I like that idea. Mm-hmm. You know.
There's a really great platform called ZMe.com. It's a new app that the college admissions officers love. It's ZEEMEE.com. Free. And it really truly looks a lot like Facebook. It has your photo. You can upload videos. And these are the type of apps that students are using to apply to colleges now.
Amazing. And I love this because there is, it's, you know, we have the light, we have the dark, yin and yang, right? There's always two sides and everyone's constantly looking for balance. I'm not a huge fan of the B word. I like more alignment. You know, and you can tell a lot from your kid and what they're going through by looking on Instagram, or Twitter, and it can give you a little insight of, okay, you know, maybe we need a little detox and reevaluation of your branding, right? Your mental health, what's going on. But it's just, again, the question, you know, it always goes back to if we're that stressed out and overwhelmed and not present in our life as educators and parents, we need to one, reevaluate. We are the foundation. And start paying attention to what's going on. So, Katie, thank you. Like, this was a really informative conversation, and I'm going to encourage people to go back and, you know, stop, keep listening, pen and paper. There's lots of resources here, so I'm sure they'll listen to it over and over again. So where can we find more of you? What are you up to? And,
like I said, you know, Dr. Gurian and I travel nationally. So our website is gurianinstitute.com, which is spelled G-U-R-I-A-N institute.com. So that is our company website. Personally, people can follow me on Katie from the Flock as my Facebook page. So that is just a parenting resource page where I post articles or blogs or video clips from news that I do. I do a lot of work in my local community on this digital citizenship piece as it relates to bullying and harassment and even teen suicide. I would highly recommend if you don't supervise your kids' news feeds, you need to start. And that doesn't mean following them. If you start to follow them, they will find another platform to, you know, there's a whole Finsta, which is fake Instagram. So they have underground accounts that they're using where they're posting most of what they're doing. So parents see the Instagram page and are like, ah, yeah, they're doing pretty good. They all have a spam or Finsta account where they're posting the real deal. So that's not really going to get you mileage as far as finding out what's going on with your kid. What's going on with your kid is, you know, watching their behavior, watching their appetite, watching their sleep, watching their stress level. So the Katie from the Block page, you'll see a lot of technology pieces on there, but there's also things just really related to social emotional resiliency and how to keep up with everything they're into.
Love it. Okay. Amazing. All these resources that you said, I'll have posted so that people can just click on the actual link.
Yes.
But thank you. And I just want to say thank you for wasting all of those hours of your life that you're not going to get back to do the resources.
I love them. I love them. You know, I had a mom call me last night and she said, my kid's missing. I'm really worried. And not that I'm downplaying that a kid missing, but by and large, most of the time, they're spending some time with a friend. But my first question is always the same. Do you have her password to her iCloud? And the answer is most often, no. Mm-hmm. And if I have a password to iCloud, I can track a kid in 2 seconds because their phone is their oxygen. If I don't have a password, then it takes a longer time to track down where they're at. So. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
We always find them. They always come home.
That's a positive thing about technology. So, well, thank you. I'm excited. I'm excited to hear the feedback and I'll be sending it your way. Anyone who's listening, who's gained huge value from this conversation, hit reply to any email that I've sent you. Let me know and I'll be forwarding it to Katie as well.
Thank you so much.
Come.